News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. It is 8:07 on your Tuesday. That means time to talk to Quinn Hillier.
Yeah, and plenty to discuss with Quinn, including how do they count votes in California?
Slowly.
Again? Slowly.
Slowly.
And then we'll also take a look at some of these races that we have coming up with the primary runoff next week. Of course, the marquee race there, and there's several big-time races, but I think most folks looking at that Senate race runoff between Barry Moore and Jared Hudson. Good morning, Quinn.
Good morning, guys.
So before we get into that, I do just kind of want to recap, you know, what happened last week. As we were talking a week ago, this exact time, the Supreme Court had not yet handed down their ruling in the case of Alabama's congressional map. And then when they did, they reverted back to that legislatively drawn 2023 map and basically said the lower court, in their words, did not heed the presumption of legislative good faith. And it's interesting, too, Sean Sullivan had Chris Pringle on earlier this week for an entire hour, or I guess it was Friday for an entire hour, and really good insight into the map drawing process. And he noted, again, as we've talked about so many times, that that map was drawn by Eddie LaCour, who was in the Attorney General's office and arguing on behalf of Alabama, did a poor job at that, at arguing back then that Alabama should be able to use that map. But the one that we're going with was drawn by LaCour and not by Pringle, but it is the one the legislature passed. So now we're headed into this August 11th race with the 6-1 map. Your final thoughts on all that?
Well, first of all, if Alabama had gone with Chris Pringle's map, we almost certainly would have avoided almost all of this crazy back and forth in the courts, because Pringle's map probably, not definitely, but probably would have passed muster, and we would all be a lot better off. But that said, I admit to being baffled by the Supreme Court ruling. I'm actually happy with the ultimate result, because it comports with my reading of both the Constitution and the Voting Rights Act, but it doesn't comport with the stuff that they have said. And I'm not the only conservative that thinks this. Hans von Spakovsky, who is one of the three or four top conservative election lawyers, he's on Fox News. He's more Trumpy than I am, and you know, he's written books with John Fund. He thought the Supreme Court would go in the other direction, just like I did. And it's because the Supreme Court, I mean, I could go down a list of about six or seven things where they directly contradicted what they had written earlier. So color me surprised that they would be so inconsistent, but color me happy that in the end what they're going to end up with is districts that that actually, you know, keep Baldwin and Mobile County together,
right,
that look normal, that, you know, don't have all these weird squiggly lines and all that.
Communities of interest.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think so many of the prognosticators who thought the Supreme Court would agree with that three-judge panel were citing the Purcell principle, right? That it was too close to the election to make those changes.
Partly.
Okay, well, they're ruling. They said states are free to decide for themselves whether last-minute changes to an election are in their best interests. But you were basing your guess that they wouldn't overturn it on some other principles here, I guess?
Well, okay, so the spirit of the Purcell principle, they definitely violated. Now, there was a line from Kavanaugh that even in the earlier Alabama case where he cited the Purcell principle but then had that throwaway line about states are free to do it on their own, it's just that courts can't do it. But, yeah, complete a whole list of other things. I mean, earlier they absolutely said that the Gulf Coast counties, even if they are a community of interest, and they sort of poo-pooed the idea that it is a community of interest, even if it is, it bows to all these other considerations. So, I mean, that's just one thing. I could go down about seven. Either way, they have made a mess of things, so it's almost impossible to understand now what the Supreme Court actually is requiring and what they're not requiring. Alabama comes out in a way that, in the long run, makes sense. In the short run, this is a mess. You have registrars all over the state who in the last 3 days have tried to do what the state itself said 4 years ago could not be done in even 4 months' time. And now the registrars are moving tens and literally hundreds of thousands of people from one district to another manually in 3 days. And that's a recipe for confusion and for mistakes.
Well, it'll be an election here in a few weeks, over 1 week for that election. And, of course, in August, you've got the election that ruling is
the congressional map. Yeah.
So that's we'll see if they got enough time to get it together. What is your opinion, Quinn, just overall? Dalton and I have been talking about these states. I think it's eight states in all that lean heavily on mail-in balloting. We'll get to California specifically here in a moment. What do you think of mail-in voting, just the concept overall?
Well, I mean, look, absentee voting, which includes mail-in voting, mm-hmm. has always been legal just about anywhere, but the rule was you had to at least swear to, attest to a good reason for not voting in person.
Right.
Like, I am scheduled to be out of town, or I am infirm and can't get to the polls, something like that.
Right.
And that, even though it was sort of on an honor system, that did limit it. But widespread mail-in voting as the primary means of voting, I've always thought is problematic. But even then, if you at least require the ballots to be in by Election Day, by the close of polls,
mm-hmm.
then everybody's, you know, working on the same general assumption,
mm-hmm.
especially if you have rules telling the post office to expedite anything that is, you know, that is marked as a ballot. This business, California, Oregon, I think Arizona, where you count ballots that are just postmarked by Election Day, and they can come in to 10 or even 14 days later, unless they're overseas military ballots, which deserve their own special category. Except for that, this late counting of ballots is an absolute abomination. It sows distrust in the system. It does open up opportunities for fraud, even though the actual commission of fraud is not as high as some people say. It's a terrible system, and the Supreme Court right now is considering a case that could basically say that it is not allowed.
Mm-hmm.
So we will see. I hope this is the last major election we see that allow overseas. I mean, that allow ballots mailed in to be counted days and even weeks later.
Yeah, and of course, you know, this conversation coming up right now so often because of those races in California. I was just watching an interview with Steve Hilton, who he's going to be second in that gubernatorial race. So Becerra passed him, and it looks like a runoff between was he the former labor secretary, Xavier Becerra,
under Biden.
And then Hilton, which he has a British accent, which is interesting, too. But California's been through that with the governor before, the governator.
Schwarzenegger.
But the Spencer Pratt race is the one that so many are looking at and saying, this just looks wrong. But that interview I was watching with Hilton, Quinn, he said that, and so California, they can receive ballots up to 30 days post-election. Like you said, it has to be marked, postmarked within 5 days of the actual election date. But Hilton was saying, all you even have to do is handwrite the date on there and they'll count it. So this is a state that mails all of their ballots out to voters.
Right.
And then waits 30 days after. You look at the returns in the Spencer Pratt race, and I know there was one batch of votes that came in that so many people have been talking about, 24,000 votes, and not a single one went to Pratt, which you would think just the odds are that he would have received one even mistaken vote there. And then you look at the returns, too. Ever since Karen Bass was squarely, you know, in that runoff, while many more votes have been pouring in, it's only been Rahman, who's now in second, this Nathia Rahman, who's been receiving those votes. They haven't been, I mean, it hasn't been proportional, the votes that Bass has been getting alongside Rahman, even though both are liberals in this blue territory. I mean, it stinks to high heaven, but this is a municipal election out there.
Well, it does stink to high heaven. If you can literally mail in a vote after Election Day, that should be easily adjudged unconstitutional. Although I guess that would apply to a federal election, maybe not so much a state election, but it's wrong. Mm-hmm. What happens is, as the early results come in, the people that game the system look at who has a chance make the runoff.
That's
and
it.
then they go to all their people, even if the voters are legitimate, which they might be, and mathematically, if you look at past results, they might, you know, it is actually possible. But they're voters who look for direction, and they go to them. They're people in you know, old folks' homes and stuff like mm-hmm. that, and they say, we need you to vote for Naaman, whatever her name is.
Rahman, yeah.
Rahman, excuse me. I was thinking our local guy, Naaman, I'm sorry. and so they, you know, they assist them with filling out their ballots, yeah. And they might be real people, but they are up to prodding and suggestion. And so that's what could be happening here, and it's technically legal, but you're right, it stinks.
Yeah, I mean,
ballot harvesting.
And when you're voting with the information of in front of you, like that's insane. That doesn't. Obviously, this thing is being orchestrated in some way, right?
Yes, it is. Now that said, it is just a fact that under California's voting system, late ballots for decades have favored Democrats because the Democrats have perfected this method of holding their ballots. Mm-hmm. And it could be technically legal. The numbers are not that skewed in terms of past performance. Already, Pratt has gotten a higher percentage of the vote in a multi-person race than Donald Trump got in Los Angeles in a two-person.
Interesting.
Which means Republican, it's not that he is underperforming the ordinary Republican vote. He's actually substantially overperforming it. So the numbers show that this could be legal, but that doesn't make it right.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see. I guess we'll get a final answer on these California elections soon. But much sooner than that, we have our own primary runoffs next week. And when we get back from the break, Quinn, I want to talk about that Barry Moore and Jared Hudson race. We've sure. seen interesting and opposing polls over the last week, one that shows Hudson with a 9-point
yep.
lead and one that shows Moore with a 9-point lead. We'll ask Quinn how much of a chance Hudson actually has to pull it off next week.
Yeah, those polls just leave you saying, go figure. Like, yeah. It really doesn't tell you anything in the end. More with Quinn on the way. It's 8:20 with Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings.
A traffic tip or your own take on the news. Text the guys at 251-343-0106 on Mobile Mornings.
825, Dan and Dalton and Quinn Hillier, quinnhillier.com, Comedy Advocate, and Dalton, somebody is going to replace Tommy Tuberville as the U.S. Senator, and more than likely one of two Republican candidates left.
Yeah, and we have some big races on the ballot a week from today. That includes the Senate race, which we'll get to, the race for Lieutenant Governor, Attorney General, and then a lot of local races as well. But Moore and Hudson, that's the marquee race, Quinn. And we've seen a couple polls that are opposite one another, one with Hudson with a 9-point lead, one with Moore with a 9-point lead. A debate last night that Moore couldn't be in attendance for because he was up voting in D.C. But what are your thoughts on the way this race is headed with a week left to go?
Well, look, I'm not in the business of endorsing. This is just sort of a neutral observation, as if, you know, just as a political scientist. Mm-hmm. It is remarkable that Jared Hudson has made it so much of a race, with Barrymore being a known quantity, having, of course, the major endorsement, starting out with a lot more money, and yet nobody really knows who's going to win, even though I think most people still think Moore is a slight favorite. But for Jared Hudson essentially to come out of nowhere is quite a story. No matter what happens with the result, it means that he has set himself up for possible other races, and, you know, and he might well win this one. But this is a guy, he's a former Navy SEAL, good mark in his favor, started an organization, apparently a legit good organization, to fight human trafficking, another mm-hmm. mark in his favor. So he has, and then he's campaigned all over the state. He's in Mobile today, doing a couple of events. So he has made a good impression on people, and it inspires hope in the system that somebody can come from basically nowhere and still be competitive. Mm-hmm. And again, this is not an endorsement of Hudson over Moore or Moore over Hudson. It's just sort of watching and saying, this is interesting. This is sort of fun to watch.
Yep. Yeah, and while those two polls had some opposite results, the one that had Moore with a 9-point lead, kind of interesting. In that poll, he carried the Trump vote pretty easily, I think 2-1. For those who are Trump supporters voting for Moore in that poll. But Hudson showing some good numbers in the youth vote, 18 to 34. The big question is, you know, the turnout next week and whether either candidate can get enough of their people out to the polls.
Well, if Hudson only wins if because he gets a huge portion of the 18 to 34 vote, that doesn't necessarily bode well for him, because mm-hmm. 18 to 34-year-olds tend not to vote yep. in heavy numbers in off-year elections
right.
and primaries. Now, mm-hmm. they actually did vote pretty heavily in the 2024 presidential race. Charlie Kirk's Get Out the Vote organization actually helped Trump there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not saying it won't happen, but it's just, you know, history shows that it's not likely.
Yeah, I guess the job of the campaign to this point, Dalton, is to get those people out to vote. And I don't know how campaigns necessarily do that. What the mechanism is to push people out the door.
Yeah.
But that's essentially what they need to do.
Yeah, even just letting them know, hey, it is coming up 1 week from today,
yep.
and you need to be out there to vote. Well, I know all eyes will be on that race and some of the other ones we have around here. Now, they have started going after one another, especially these last couple of weeks. There were questions about that Hudson organization that were brought up by, I think, Moore's people and how much they're actually assisting law enforcement. And then lots of questions about Barry Moore's military service and whether, you know, it rose to the level that he can call himself a veteran the way he does. I think both have cleared those up.
Well, yeah, although Moore is certainly getting rather chippy in response. I forget what I saw. He like threatened a reporter with a lawsuit.
I think Josh Moon, yeah, with the Alabama Political Reporter.
Yeah, so you know that doesn't necessarily mean that he's super confident.
Quinn, if you can tell everybody where they can read your stuff.
QuinnHillier.com. You can subscribe for free or just Google Quinn Hillier and NOLA.com.
Thanks so much, Quinn. We'll talk
Thanks,
in a week.
God.
Okay.
There he is, Quinn Hillier. And coming back, we'll turn up your voice, 251-343-0106. A lot of text to get to on this Tuesday morning.
Turn up your voice on the text line, 251-343-0106. Now, back to Mobile Mornings.
Well, looks like Elor Gudrason, whatever his name is, he's coming up like time and time again on our show now. He's the best soccer player in all of Iceland. And Sheila sends us pictures of some of the Iceland soccer stars or players who are up at Auburn. Of course, that game is against Argentina today?
Tonight, yeah, 7:30.
Okay. Iceland against Argentina. Everybody's wondering if Messi's going to play. That's at Auburn. And she sent a picture of the Iceland players. It looks like they're in their jerseys.
Hmm.
They don't want to be noticed or anything. But they, yeah. they were at the Auburn Super Regional over the weekend and saying they were taking selfies with people and stuff like that.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, and I follow this Iceland team closely, that looks to me like Albert Gudmundsson and Emil Havard-Jifsson.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I pulled up their roster. I have no idea.
Havard-Jifsson is on the left. He's the one, for an odd reason, sitting on a child's tricycle. But anyway.
Now that I look closely, that might be Birkir Bjarnason.
Well, look closely. Well, all they had to do is turn a certain way because they're wearing their jerseys out in public.
Now, it's a close race for some of these countries, but I would bet that Iceland pays more to have their surnames put on the back of their jerseys than any other team.
Yes.
Don't you think?
Without doubt.
There's a lot of consonants in those names.
There would be, and...
a lot of S's.
So you've got, how many on the soccer team? You got 20 11. Or so?
Oh, you mean on the entire roster? 23-man roster.
23-man roster. And I would say Iceland leads the World Cup in actual misspellings on their own jerseys.
More than likely, yeah. Yep. And with two 23-man rosters there, Jordan Hare tonight, how wild is it that... now, there are a lot of soccer fans that'll be there just for the spectacle and to see all of these great players, but pretty much everyone's hoping to see Messi. Mm-hmm. Play at Jordan Hare. So I'm hoping for everyone's sake who's going to that game tonight, that international friendly, that Messi sees the field. He needs to get a little work before the World Cup starts later this week.
Turn those little legs a little bit, you know. And good morning, guys, from Bucky Beaver. Bucky's amazed that Iceland even has a soccer team.
Mm.
I'm not amazed by that. I mean, it's they've got a couple of warm months in Iceland, I'm sure. And wasn't it always the tale that Iceland is the one that's warmer.
Green, yeah. And then Greenland
is
ice.
The one that's colder and icy.
Yeah.
Right.
Let's see how many. There's been one World Cup appearance before this year for Iceland, and they've never made it out of the group stage. So
okay.
You're right. They don't have a lot of history that's holding them back.
And yet they were hailed as the Los Angeles Lakers up at Auburn over the weekend.
Yeah.
They were getting autographs and all that kind of thing. Giving autographs, I suppose.
Some other text, Jerry in Fort Morgan, referencing the Continental Motors story, Continental Aerospace story from Lanyap, where they're being taken out of Chinese state-run control and being sold to a U.S. firm. And Jerry... this is could be a very true statement. He said, the only thing worse than being owned by the communists in China is being owned by a private equity company. And that's what's happening now with Continental. He also said, once again, Quinn, you're an idiot. And then he said, I bet Quinn and that other little boy, Josh Moon, get chippy with each other. Yeah, we'll get to the Josh Moon, Barry Moore dust up here in just a minute.
Yeah, I don't know when that happened. Was that late last week that happened?
No, it happened like yesterday.
Oh, really?
I don't know when Moore threatened Moon with a lawsuit, but that was all breaking yesterday.
Okay, well, Moore's up in D.C. because he wasn't at the debate yesterday. Hudson, according to Quinn, is in our midst today down here in Mobile or Baldwin County, one or the other.
Yeah. Jason texts in, good morning, guys, and good news about Continental. Hopefully that change gets the Chinese communist flag removed for good. Yeah, I'd like to know, you know, how much Chinese influence there is down around Brooklyn and the port. You know, we've talked in the past about even just the cranes at the port and how so often that's
China made
and has Chinese scanners on it. He also said, I think the people of Pritchard should be pleased with their mayor so far. And the same council raising concerns about her were silent during the failed tenure of Jimmy Gardner.
Is it the same council or the same people?
I think there's at least a few. He says, Mayor Davis has been very transparent, and that's something needed in Pritchard and something they've never had. It's like what we've seen nationally with the establishment refusing any change. That's certainly what it feels like because, you know, Mayor Davis and we haven't been able to see many results to this point.
No.
One that you can point to. And I don't know how much of it is through her work and her administration's work or just the Pritchard Water Board kind of turning around and trying to fix some problems with the receivership there, John Young taking control there. But they wasted 12% less water last year than they did the year prior, which is a massive drop considering how much water was just leaking out of those pipes and how many issues they've had with the Pritchard pipes over the years. They are seeing some turnaround there. But for the actual financial turnaround of the city, you kind of have to wait and see. She's only been in office since November. And the council says she hasn't been transparent with them enough, but she's saying, listen, we were at such a bad place. You got to let me do a little work here before we see any results. It does seem like the council is putting up roadblocks because they don't feel they're involved enough for whatever reason.
Well, it does. So, you know, we're just speculating. We're just kind of guessing on our part on the look, it would take, you know, would need to be the mayor to straighten all this out this quickly would be Mayor Einstein. And if Pritchard were to elect Mayor Einstein, maybe he could figure it all out. Now, also, she has recently let go of that finance director. She let her go, Wilson, last week. So that's another problem for Davis. So she didn't think she was getting the information from the finance director quickly enough. Mm-hmm. So she lets her go. So she's dealing with that. And now on the other side of it, she would like to hire a guy named Bob Holloman, but the council is balking against that, saying, no, you can't. You can't do that right now. That's going to court.
Yeah. And so, I did have one issue with Mayor Davis. And she, like I said, she's been saying the exact right things ever since she took office. Weekly newsletters that keep people updated with what she says is going on. But she got awfully chippy when that finance director's, I don't know if officially resigned or were let go or whatever it was. But she basically blamed the media for questioning about the finance director being let go last week and more or less said, you know, that's some in-house stuff and we'll handle that in-house. When you're mayor, you do have to be a little more forthcoming when it comes to, you know, letting people go, I believe. But,
yeah, I mean, when you're talking about transparency in the government, then you have to you go all the way.
Yeah.
Either you are or you're not. So,
but it's clear that there's a an internal war going on over there.
Yeah,
right?
there is. I mean, council versus her, and I think some of our texters are saying council should be like, thank goodness for her that somebody's in there. But at the same time, it seems that some of the texters are thinking maybe there's things that council hopes she never does find out. Mm-hmm. You know, where she's digging a little too much.
Yeah.
Let the playing field be as it always has been, and of course, Davis was elected with the idea that that was not the way it was going to be. And to this point, it seems, at least publicly, what she said, that she is trying to right all the wrongs. The problems are, there are just a lot of wrongs that have to be righted, and she's just one person. And if the council is not going to necessarily work with her, then she's got that going against her, too.
We're bouncing back and forth on our two of our three big things here, but Pat texted again, why would Continental not get PPP? So part of this Lagniappe story is the reason that Continental, I mean, the reason that the Chinese state-owned company is selling Continental to a U.S. firm is part of a settlement with the Department of Justice regarding the fraudulent receival of PPP loans during the pandemic. And while they received much more, the $7.5 million loan is the one being looked at here. And Pat said, why would Continental not get PPP? My cousin works there and they never missed a day of work. They were essential employees, just like I was. And I don't know the specifics there. It sounds like maybe because under Trump and under Alabama Republican leadership, you know, for as far as that'll take you, you know, they're not always Republican in their acts, but they do carry that handle, that trying to get Chinese influence out has been kind of the a hallmark of the Trump administration here for these last couple of years. And if even if it just takes a technicality, like they didn't fill out the right forms or didn't do things 100% the right way, using that as leverage to get them out of industry, I could totally see that being a some of the means to their ends here. But
yeah, I don't know that the fact that they are a Chinese company would keep them from getting the PPP or not. I'm not sure.
A few of you texting in, Quinn refuses to eat crow regarding the Supreme Court ruling last week. And when we talked with Quinn a week ago, before the Supreme Court ruling came down, he seemed awfully sure that they would continue the ruling of that three-judge panel that told the Alabama legislature to use the 5-2 map, not the 6-1 map.
Yep.
Well, of course, we know what happened. The Supreme Court went with the 6-1 map. And their reasoning was, hey, this is the state. They said that the three-judge panel didn't give the legislature and I'm trying to remember their exact words, but they didn't give the legislature their leeway to act on good principle. Mm-hmm. The three-judge panel went in with their ruling, assuming that the legislature was trying to get one over on them. The Supreme Court said, you can't rule like that. You have to give them freestanding. And also, as far as how close the elections are, again, the Supreme Court said, listen, that's the state's call to make. It's not the court's call on when a state can hold elections or whether the state can get their election materials rounded up quickly enough to hold it honestly. The Supreme Court said, that's not your job. That's the state's job. And that's what the ruling ended up being. Now, for the elections we have a week from today, the rest of these primary runoffs, which remember, the August 11th election, that's four U.S. congressional races. Yep. One, two, down here,
seven.
Six and seven.
Yep.
And there's two state Senate races, too, but those don't have to deal with us down here in Southwest Alabama. But next week's primary runoffs are for all of the other state and federal races that went to runoff. And one of those, of course...
So Wes Allen and the Attorney General race?
You have that. Yeah, Wes Allen and John Wall for Lieutenant Governor.
Lieutenant Governor.
And then you have Jay Mitchell and Catherine Robertson for Attorney General. But the Senate race is the one that's gathering all the headlines this week. And I'll get to Barry Moore here in just a second and what he said yesterday regarding his military service, which has been called into question here over the last few days. Here was Barry Moore. He couldn't make it to the 18-19 news debate last night. Here's part of the video that he sent in as his portion of the debate. And let me unpause him real quick.
Okay.
And unpause Barry Moore. Here we go.
Thank you for being here tonight, and thank you to 18-19 News for hosting this debate. I'm Barry Moore, and I'm a garbage man from Batten's Crossroads, Alabama. I grew up on a farm and ran my own garbage business for many years before serving in Congress. I was the first elected official in the nation to endorse Donald Trump in 2015, and I believe the Lord called me to run for the Senate. I wanted to be there with you tonight. I couldn't be because Congress is in session, working on reconciliation to ensure our border is secure. The Republican majority in the House is razor thin, and every vote matters. The people of Alabama elected me to show up and do a job, and that's what I'm doing tonight. So I won't apologize for being where the work is. The race comes down to a clear choice for Alabama. On June 16th, you'll pick between two very different candidates. One has a record you can examine. Every vote, every bill, every fight on behalf of our state. President Trump looked at this race and he made his choice. He endorsed me. He didn't endorse my opponent. He endorsed me because he knows what's at stake. You don't have to guess where I stand. My record is clear.
So that's part of it. That's about a third of the video that Barry Moore sent in since he couldn't make it. Now, Jared Hudson was at the debate last night. He wasn't voting in Congress like Barry Moore is.
And he wasn't debating anybody.
Yeah, he was, well, just up there
and
speaking his piece. He clipped a portion of the debate and posted it to his social media pages and titled it, "I was hoping to have a debate tonight." Here's Jared Hudson.
With that being said, we were supposed to have a debate tonight, and I hate that we can't, because I would have loved for the people of Alabama to see the difference in me and my opponent. However, he had to go do his job and vote in Congress, even though reconciliation votes are not until tomorrow.
So, yeah, the actual votes coming today and tomorrow, there were a couple votes. They were unanimous in Congress last night that Barry Moore put his name on, but I think those were pretty much just to keep things moving along to get us to the reconciliation vote today and tomorrow, or today or tomorrow. But, you know, the questions come up here about Barry Moore's military service recently, and he made this big post explaining himself, I guess, as far as that's concerned. He said the attacks are offensive not just to Moore, but to the tens of thousands of Alabamians who have served in the Guard and Reserves. His records do show that he enlisted in 1988, completed basic training at Fort Jackson, and then served through 1997. He received an honorable discharge and then posted his Veterans Affairs ID card to back that up.
Yeah.
And his campaign clarified. We had a big conversation yesterday about the DD-214s, the paperwork to show that he served. That was a big part of our conversation yesterday. He clarified in his statement that guardsmen like him, who served before 2022 and were never deployed, don't receive that DD-214.
Right.
Instead, he said they receive an NGB-22, which he did provide. And I don't know if that puts that question to rest or not.
I think it does.
I would say so, but you know, I've got texts like from Leo this morning who texted in and said, he goes, referencing Moore, I asked AI this question, are people discharged from the Army National Guard early considered veterans? And the answer, and this is from AI and Leo, said no, members of the Army National Guard discharged early before completing 180 days of federal active duty are not considered veterans. I asked Leo, does the fact it was an honorable discharge help Moore's argument at all? He says, no active duty. He doesn't count. So maybe it's not settled for everyone. They still feel that Barry Moore didn't do his time, I
it's
guess.
It's a technicality more than a violation or something more nefarious. Now, if you are a veteran and offended that he goes by the moniker that he's a veteran, you know, that'd be your opinion. That's mm-hmm. fine. I don't know that it's the one thing I do like about both these candidates is that they both speak very clearly. You know where they stand. Like Barry Moore said, we can look at his record. And there it is, right? Very, very Trumpy, very America First, all the way. And then and even though we cannot look at Jared's record, Jared Hudson's record, he does speak very clearly in campaigning for the office, and you'd know where he stands. So there shouldn't be any real confusion to who these candidates are. And I think that's kind of refreshing to me.
Now, Michael says Barry Moore absolutely just used that as an excuse to dodge Hudson. He said also Barry Moore is completely guilty of stolen valor because he claimed to be a sergeant, is what Michael says on the text line. 251-343-0106 if you want to jump on.
Stay on top of big news and the local beat with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on Mobile Mornings.
5 minutes until 9, FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. This segment brought to you by Tobias and Comer Law, local personal injury law firm that's been doing great work in Mobile and Baldwin counties, helping locals out all along the way. And they do care a whole lot about this community. That's apparent if you just listen to them talk or check out their website, tobiascomerlaw.com. Several things they do throughout the year, like Operation Backpack going into the school year, and there's many more where that came from. And they've been working on Dolphin Street in Mobile for decades. Attorneys Desi Tobias, Brian Comer, and Lacey Smith do a great job handling your case personally from day one until it's resolved. They've got the experience to tackle everything that you may encounter out there. Car crashes, boating mishaps, defective products, workplace injuries. Down here, you see a lot of maritime claims as well. If you want to get more information on them, you can find them at tobiascomerlaw.com. There's tips on the website, a lot of resources you can use, and their monthly podcast, Law 251, where we dive in on all kinds of legal questions, especially around personal injury law. You can learn a lot from those years of podcasts we've gathered up there at tobiascomerlaw.com. Also, you can call for a free consultation anytime, 251-432-5001. That's tobiascomerlaw.com.
Text line 251-343-0106. DEI texter says, I'm voting Hudson, Mitchell, and Ziegler next week.
Wow. I did not expect that from DEI Texter. I don't know if there's games afoot here or not. But Hudson, yeah. Jay Mitchell, and Jim Ziegler, who's in the runoff for that Public Service Commission seat, if he wins that, then incumbents for PSC would be 0-2 this election cycle,
wow.
Which I don't think would have happened if there wasn't such a big dust-up during the legislative session about who and how many members should constitute the Public Service Commission.
Yeah, but you're right.
They're paying for it now.
The spotlight was on them, and it's obviously Alabamians, for the most part, are pretty dissatisfied with the whole way that thing works.
Maz asks, is it the three-judge panel that has been ruling on the election maps the same three judges that have ruled on the method of executions in the state? I don't think so. I'll say that not knowing entirely if I think those are different judges that have ruled on that over the time, but I'll look into that, Maz, and see if it's the exact same panel there with Manasco and Carew.
Yeah, the Manasco name to me has only come up with the district lines. I could be wrong.
I've seen her come up in other cases, but yeah, I don't think the execution ones handle. I might be wrong on that. Coming up on the Jeff Poor Show, we'll have Bradley J on to talk about all things national politics. I'm sure he'll take a look at some of the state races as well. Travis Johnson with Pathway Church in hour number two, and Will Hampson with P2 Public Affairs on with Jeff Poor in hour number three.
Dan and Dalton, Mobile Mornings. This fine show comes back at you tomorrow, our Wednesday edition, starting at 6 a.m. Talk to you then.